My name is Jeff Pagano, and welcome to the Harpen and Rugby Podcast, the Leinster and Ireland fan site in audio form. Last week, I had fans from Munster and Ulster on to give first impressions on both their teams and the URC in general after the opening weekend. That's a theme I brought forward to this week, where I have fans from elsewhere around the league doing the same thing. So without any further ado, here's how we got on. Now it's time for our back and forward chat, and after talking to Munster and Ulster fans last week about their first impressions of the new season, it's time to look elsewhere, and in the spotlight this time around, we have faithful followers of two other past league champions in Connacht and the Glasgow Warriors. First up, representing the league's westernmost team, is better known on the Twitter machine as At The Second Row. A warm welcome to Mr. Parta Kelly.
Hi, Jeff. How are you? How's life treating you?
All good. Thanks very much. Yeah, great to have you on. And also all set to fill us in on how the Warriors have started their campaign is Mr. At The Pen GW himself. Welcome, Mr. David Arnott.
Hi, how are we doing?
All good, all good. Thanks for coming on, guys. Well, what I've been doing first, we're going to talk about the URC kickoff in a bit, but what I've been doing with my guests the past few weeks is starting off with a little chat about women's rugby and what we, you know, trying to get as much input as I can about how things are going. I'm going to start with you, Parik, because like the recent chat, negative kind of chat about what's going on in the Irish Games kind of started with those interprovincials and how the Connacht women's team has been treated. Like, what's your take on the whole thing?
That event was, I think it's going to, when that report comes out of what happened, there's going to be some poor volunteer thrown under a bus about that tent that sparked off a huge conversation. And there's going to be some poor volunteer to be thrown under a bus, and there won't be kind of, no one's going to look at the overall problems that caused that issue. And that's kind of a problem in itself. But the Interpros were great. They showed off that there's some really good quality women's rugby in Ireland. And for me, it's created a great conversation, but the conversation for me isn't there's a problem with women's rugby. For me, it's going to be there's a problem with rugby. It's an Irish rugby problem. It's a Scottish rugby problem. It's a Welsh rugby problem, not a women's rugby problem in Scotland, Wales, and Ireland. It's, if you, by saying it's a women's rugby problem, you're taking the onus off the overall RFU, WRU, SRU, any governing body. You're taking responsibility of them because you're just making a portion of their remit, not it's an Irish rugby problem. And it's got to be, everyone's talking about we don't have the ground up. I'm like, that's grand. But there are teams right now, I know in Connacht, they have under 18s all the way to under 18. Where did those girls go, women go at that age, from 18 to 21? There's no stepping stone to senior rugby. And then you kind of, then I've written an article saying women's rugby needs to go professional in Ireland. I'm sure it's the same in Wales and Scotland. There needs to be a professional tier, because if you're 18, 19, you're thinking about college, you're thinking about your choices. Where are you going to go? Where's going to draw you as a person to get you the best out of your career after rugby? And if you're going into an academy system with a partnership with NUIG, GMIT, UL, Belfast, one of the colleges in Dublin's, suddenly you're like, hold on a second, I'll stay in Galway. I'll do my college in Galway. I'll become a professional rugby player, spend 4 years and have a career out of it. Like, that pathway isn't there. That can only be created by professionalism, because there's no underage setup in the provinces in Ireland or even the clubs from 18 to 21. And professionalism will actually drive that next phase, which needs to happen in women's rugby. But these are top down, bottom up. Like, there's no one solution. Professionalism and the answer, getting more players underage isn't the answer. It's got to be both at the same time, because if it's got to be build and they will come whilst applying them to come up.
Yeah. And another thing we were saying last week as well is it's not just within rugby that we've the problem. And if you have people like women or girls who want to get into sports, like in the men, we kind of take it for granted that rugby could be the best pathway for them from an Ireland standpoint if they have to pick a sport. But with women, that's not the case. I mean, the way things are at the moment, you're talking, there's a lot of competition from GAA and football, and you could argue that there's even a better pathway for them in football if they want to take them. So rugby has to compete and actually actively go for these players. So it's important to push that as well.
Well, in football GAA terms in Ireland, the AFL is the actual competition.
Exactly.
They're going to go to Australia to earn money, because that's what the top women football players are doing currently. They're going to Australia for the off season, the GAA, and going back and then playing for their counties. And that's that's the trick. Instead of like sevens rugby, and instead of trying to convert GA players to football, once that core age of skill set learning at 14 to 18 has bypassed them, let's start creating proper channels for the 14 to 18 year olds that are there now, because they are there. Like, we are now 8 years on from that semi-final win against New Zealand. Those players that were inspired are actually there wanting to play right now. And now we're at a time where there's so much view on the women's game that we're now inspiring the next set of people. And if there isn't somewhere for them to go in 8 years' time, then it's another opportunity lost in what is a crisis.
And yeah, and you talk about that great team from 2013 and 2014 as well. And another thing we're saying is that those players who would normally you'd expect to be filtering through into coaching, but at this time, when this time has elapsed, they are going into coaching, but they're going elsewhere. You've got, like Nia Briggs is still at club level. You know, Lynn Cantwell was let to go to South Africa. She stayed in rugby. And then someone like Sophie Spence had to go over to Wales. Is that in the other? You would think that if you could get them involved in the Irish coaching setup, that'd be they'd be the perfect role models for the players coming up that they'd want to work for.
But once again, it's an Irish rugby problem. We're outsourcing our development. So our top players are playing in England. Our top players are playing in France. We're outsourcing their development and not having, because we don't have systems in place to develop them here. And the AIL will become good. Like, at some point, that will be good. But the problem is that in the interprovincial level is a step up. Every time you go up a level or you go up a standard of player, the test of a player goes up. And the Celtic League, as it was back, that got created for the Welsh teams and Scottish teams and Irish teams when the game went professional, needs to happen again now for women more than ever. That platform needs to be there.
And as you pointed out yourself, it's not just an Irish situation. It's happening in Scotland and Wales as well. And one thing we tend to do as in Ireland is we focus on ourselves and we think it's just a problem happening here. So that when we get knocked out of a World Cup qualifier, it's a disaster or whatever. But what you can forget is what a good thing that result was for Scottish rugby. So do you see the way I've steered this over now to David now? And I just want to talk a bit about how that win was good for the game in Scotland. You had Chloe Raleigh scoring a try at the very end, and that kick, the pressure kick, Sarah Love's a replacement. She came on the pitch. I don't think she ever imagined she'd be coming on to take a kick like that. But I mean, just to flip it around, how great a result was that for Scottish women's rugby?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, we have the same issues. I mean, we don't have a professional system. Our best players have to go down south or go abroad as well. You know, Jade Conkle and players like this. So we've got the same problem. We've got such a small pool. We any victory like that is fantastic. And I think anything that promotes the women's game in this country can only be a good thing. Rugby is a secondary sport generally in this country anyway, men's or females. It's always going to take second place to football. So we need these kind of results. We need to have a strong men's game and a strong women's game. Because if we don't, well, same problem with you guys, we'll lose generations.
Yeah, definitely. It's a question of how we promote it as well. I mean, like Parik said, we need to talk about it. We need to appreciate that it's a problem throughout rugby. It's not, you know, it's focusing on just the women's the women's game in itself. Just consider that it is all part of the bigger picture. And hopefully, like we were saying, ideally there would be some kind of a Celtic League between the countries, same as the men's. I sometimes think that it's a mistake to assume that you can directly model it on the way the men's game, because you're talking about a different sport. Like you say, they're amateurs at the moment. So if they're going to play, they might need a different kind of shorter, compact, maybe competition, but something that's going to get some kind of traction that's easy to promote and stuff. And we can get it going that way. But anyway, you know, listen, best of luck to you in the World Cup anyway, that's for sure. And that'll be something positive, and hopefully Ireland can pick up and get back up. Well, anyway, listen, we're going to move on. And we were talking about the first two rounds of the United Rugby Championship, shiny new coat of paint on the league, new teams and all this kind of stuff. But we're going to start with you, Parik. And Connacht had sort of mixed fortunes the first couple of weeks, started with the Cardiff Rugby. We can't say Blues anymore. And then they had a really good win over the Bulls the other night. So how did they look to you?
For me, the core difference between the Blues match and the Bulls match is everything we try to do against the Bulls came off, and everything we tried to do against Cardiff didn't. And that's the only thing we didn't change. Like, our game plan didn't change. Like, we were still taking the ball to the line flat, but we were just knocking the ball on. And if you're knocking the ball on every time you try a nice fancy strike move, you're not really going to have the ball do very well, you know? Cardiff were worth their win. They had more ball. They attacked well. They were clinical when they got into 22. You know, it's great that Lido can get the ball in line with the scrum when, and that helps, but like that, there are two decisions that will wreck people's heads, but I'm a big fan of control the controllables. Like, if you hold on to our ball, we're not facing the scrum back in our line. You know, it's those type of things. The Bulls match was great. I think, Mike Hansen's already become a hero in Galway anyway, straight away. Like, that try, just getting the ball, landing square and just breaking so many tackles was just incredible. I honestly do think when I saw the TMO replay going, like, they're ruining fun. Like, where our counterattacks were really good. Like, the TMO chalked off a try earlier on, Carty, Porch and Daly linked up really well on the wing and, like, really in no space at all. And like, you know, a very, very flat foot pass, was, was deemed forward. And, you know, like, we just attacked with some real energy. We're clinical, even in wet weather. Our passes stuck. Like, we had really nice set piece play. We had good variation. We weren't bullied. And that was a big Bulls pack. Like, it's where we had the bigger pack at times, how we were just dominating in defense. We just made, it's one of those games where when everyone makes the right decision all the time, you don't have to play well. And we played well on top of it. And defensive decisions were done well. We picked our moments when to go in on the ball. I think even with Jack Harty having a poor first half by his own standards, like lockdown kicks, Marmion had a few lockdown kicks and he was a contender for man the match. Like, things worked in the Bulls match that just didn't work in the Cardiff match. I think we just needed the Cardiff match to kind of go, all right, that's it, it's done. That has to be it done now. That can't, we've laid down a marker of this is the standard that we can play at. And if we, like, I think one of the big things that bugs me as a Connacht fan is people say when Connacht on their day can, you know, that really annoys me. I'm like, but we play like that, like half the time, like, why today is always going to be our day. Like, that's the way I view it. That's the way I think, I hope the people in Connacht are talking about it. Like, today is our day. Every day is our day because we can perform like that. And a lot of the things that changed, especially in the first half where, you know, the 10-7, that was quite cagey. The big change for the Connacht team was that being world-class at things that you don't need to be world-class at. So every loose ball in the second half against Bulls, we were the first person onto. That wasn't the case in the Cardiff match or the first half of that game. We were second to loose balls. We were second to just being that aware to dive on a ball, kill a ball. The scraps, the hard work, we weren't world-class at those things. And when we became almost world-class at those things, everything else was just easy.
And it's not like the Bulls didn't come to play either. I mean, they took a hide in the previous weekend, but we saw it from them. We saw it from the Stormers as well, against Munster. They from the kickoff, they really went at you, and they got that early try. And you know, but it was just a case of when you settle down, because you were coming off a loss as well, so you were trying to find the game as well. It's just that once you clicked, it just clicked really well for you.
Yeah, they started really well. And that try they took was literally, you know, a gap really well spotted. Dave Heffernan wasn't marking his pillar. Like, that's defense 101. And he'll never make that mistake again. Inside and second, you have a line break from 40 meters out. You're kind of always guaranteed a try, especially one of those type of line breaks when you're after sliding through forwards. But the Bulls weren't clinical. Like, they had opportunities to score, but they were going off feet. They're giving away penalties. At one point, we pushed them back 20 meters in a defense, in a 3 minute set of defense in the first half, you know, and forced into kick, which Mike Hansen got up, called the mark, and we were able to clear our lines to halfway. That's a huge momentum killer, let alone Tiernan O'Halloran's turnover on the stroke of halftime. They had opportunity to score. They could have been 21-10 up at halftime, but they didn't take those opportunities. Whereas in the second half, when we got a sniff, we took a try every time when we could.
Do you want to give a comment on Jake White's comments?
If you want to make comments like that, you better win.
Yeah.
And you didn't, and you got humped. You know, like there's only the only you know, like if you wanna talk shite, you're gonna get bit, you know, and imagine and people coming out and saying things like that about Connacht, I'm like, okay, you can talk us down, but you've got to back it up. And the Bulls didn't back it up, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And taking a peek down after the match, taking a peek down the South African Twitterati rabbit hole after the game, it was all because of the crazy referees' interpretations of the breakdown and all that kind of stuff. It's amazing that, I mean, that stuff is in, people say that's just in Wales. It's in every country. You get that kind of crack. Like you said, the match was played the way it was. And like you say, the Bulls, they weren't clinical enough, and they paid the price.
Yeah, if they'd scored the try, I think as a real one of the big ones is they were camped on our line for they had some really good breaks and they're on our line, and then just, you know, the new latch law, you have to stay on your feet as the second person just went straight onto their bellies on top of the floor, and that was it, penalty and turnover. Kind of cleared their lines. That's not the ref's fault. Like, you know, that's the player not doing his job. And there's so many times where if you look through the Bulls match, so many. Their players weren't doing their jobs. Take Hansen's wonder try. That wouldn't be scored against a Welsh or Scottish team because that second layer of defence wouldn't let Hansen just go. You know, yeah, Merriman had a nice, you know, slightly guided line, and Deland's, I genuinely think if they looked back at Deland further on than they did, that would have been disallowed personally, but they just looked at that moment off the collision. But if their chase defence was better, Hansen wouldn't have got that far. They only had one person chasing the ball. Where was the second layer to make the hit? If he caught the ball, no one was there. That doesn't happen against Glasgow. That doesn't happen against Edinburgh. That doesn't happen against Treviso. You know, and the Bulls and all the South African teams would have to get used to how we play. Just as much as we have to get used to how they play, it's going to take a few seasons. I wouldn't be throwing the baby out with the bathwater just yet. There's a nice excitement about the DRC. I'm enjoying it. There's some great scores. Every team is just... as if they've been told, lads, just throw the ball around. Come on, it's fine. Have a bit of fun. And it's been enjoyable to watch.
And as for Glasgow, it's kind of similar first couple of matches. You went to Belfast for your first game. Now, you got within a bonus point, but it was a high-scoring match there. And then you went on to put away the Sharks, though they nicked a couple of tries at the end, but still it was a good performance, some great tries in that match. What did you make of it all, David?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't worry about what Jake White says. He'll be applying for a job at your club in a couple of years' time. Like he has everywhere else. We were fantastic on Saturday, to be quite honest with you. We did probably the opposite of what we did against Ulster. We had very, very slow starts against Ulster, first half and second half, and that's what punished us, I think, more than anything. We could have walked away with a win in Ulster, I genuinely believe, because we matched them apart from the first sort of 10 minutes of each half. And I know that sounds daft, but, you know, we stick in there, don't give away a couple of silly tries, and we could have easily won that game. It wasn't as if they were far ahead of us. On Saturday, the start to each half, we blitzed the Sharks, absolutely blitzed them. And, I mean, we scored, at least two or three cracking tries, and one that was disallowed as well. We've got a seriously, seriously exciting bunch of youngsters, and I think they're only going to get better as the season goes on. Might have a wee dip here and there, but I think we've benefited from having a poor season last year because we got so many youngsters into the team and got them playing regularly, and now they are starting to look pretty decent, and we've made some good signings. I think we are maybe not going to win it this year or next year necessarily, but we're building something the way we did a few years ago.
Definitely. And talk a little bit about this lad. What's his name? Rory Darge. He's looking really good. He's a number seven, and he was looking good last season, and he's hit the ground running this as well.
I can't believe Edinburgh let him go. I know they've got Hamish Watson, but I still can't believe they let him go. This kid's got something about him. He was absolutely magnificent against Ulster. Had a fantastic game, and he's something that we've really been looking for. We've not had a seven that can play there. We've been the last two or three seasons, the back row's been a bit of a mishmash. It's been what, right, take you from six, put you here, and put you here, and put you at eight. Now we've got Thomas Gordon, we've got Rory Darge, and I think we look like that's a position that's now set. If it's not one, it's the other. And that's going to make a big, big difference to us over the season. If we can keep these guys fit, that will be a crucial position for us, I think, because we've lost a lot of turnovers and struggled at times. These guys aren't going to let that happen. And when you add in Jack Dempsey in the back row as well, he looks a player. He was instrumental on Saturday. His play in the lead up to the third try was superb. He's going to be a big, big, big signing for us.
And what was the atmosphere like down in Scotstown? Was it good? Everyone happy to be back, I presume?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. We've missed it. We love our rugby, and we love getting behind our team. And last season was a big miss. You know, I think the team really struggled on the back of it as well. That lift from the crowd wasn't there at all. So, yeah, it was great to be back. Cold, wet, but hey-ho, what else do you expect from Glasgow in October?
What I want to talk about now is just basically this new competition we've got. And I just want to trying to get attitudes from around the league, the fans from around the league, as to what they think of the new format. And I'll start back with you, Padraig, on Connacht. And the conventional, if you want to call it, wisdom is that one of the clubs that this new format might hurt most, more than any, is Connacht with the fixtures and the way they're set up. What's your take on that?
Yeah, like it's going to affect the teams that I think it's going to affect teams like Connacht, Edinburgh, Benetton, maybe even Glasgow. I'd put Glasgow up in the Ulster tier more than our tier. So yeah, say if you have the Leinster at top, then you have Munster, Ulster, Glasgow. That'd be in the old format, it would be the top four most times. And then you'd have the Connacht, Ulster, Scarlets, Connacht, Scarlets, Edinburgh, Ospreys, you know, that the Cardiff, then that tier there. It's going to be hardest for those clubs because we don't have the budgets of the three big tier Irish teams. And I think Glasgow, like they said, they're producing really good players, and they've always produced really good players. And if they get a good run, they're always there, thereabouts. And then you add in the South African teams, it will take them 2 years to get used to it. And yes, it will get harder. But if you want to be the best, you've got to beat the best, and you've got to get yourself up there. You know, I think the four pools are great. You have something to play for within your four groups. We have an interprovincial title, which I think Irish fans have kind of wanted for such a long time. Then I think, is it in 2 years' time, it's going to go to a flat top eight instead of the top from each conference goes in. I think when that happens, Connacht will have more chance of getting into the Champions Cup every year and into the knockouts. But until then, like, yeah, it's going to be tough, but we have to suck it up and win matches. Let's get top two in our pool. Why not? Like that should be our goal. Not if we want to win the league, we have to be the top two anyway. So let's do that and be in a Champions Cup. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. You know, it's the whole thing of, like I said earlier on, when Connacht on their day, well, it should always be our day. We should always be aiming for it to be our day. We should always be aiming to beat the next team. Yeah, it's harder. Life gets harder every now and again. We've just gone through 18 months of hard. You know, let's move on, win matches. That's all we can do, you know?
And because when people say, oh, yes, this league has got a sort of a top four or five teams set in stone and everyone else is going to be fighting over the other three places. I mean, that's all well and good, but you still got to go win the quarterfinal if you're one of those top four or five places and teams. And you look at a team like Leinster, it would be hoping to be in European involvement as well. That's a lot of games at the end of the season. I mean, it's that quarterfinal will be winnable, even on the road for these teams, and they'll be competitive. And if you fought to make the fight to get into those top eight places, all the better, you know? So if you look at it positively, you know, there'll be a lot to play for come the business end of the season, and a shorter amount of games as well with just the 18, you know, so every point's going to count.
Yeah, and you know, we get to actually have a break and watch the internationals and enjoy them. Like, just sit, watch the internationals for 3 weeks and go, all right, now back to the league. You know, it's a nice break. The 18 games works. The system works. It does work at the moment. Let's see how it plays out over 2-3 years. But the URC is the variation of this that's going to stick. I think there's just too much kind of thought and gone into this long term. Mm-hmm. This isn't, it felt like pro rugby, the Magnus League, the Celtic League, and the Rabo Direct. That's the thing that's every name it's ever had. Was always a 3 year project or a 4 year, you know, where this seems like a 10 to 15 to 20 year project. And it's got to be, because we're challenging for visual rights against the Gallagher Premiership or the top 14, which have 100 years of history. And I think everyone forgets that, you know, they've been going against each other since the early 1900s. Like, the Irish teams were only did interprovincials as a way to get selected for Ireland, you know. And once we realize that, and that's what we're going against, how we think about it has to change. And I say we in a cough Wales sense. And because I do think genuinely that the Scottish clubs buy into the pro, whatever variation it was, the Scottish teams always bought in more. The Scottish fans bought in that bit more than the Welsh fans ever did. And some fans do buy in, but the problem is they're kind of drowned out by a very large minority in Wales.
Yeah, and that's a minority that's hankering, pining for this Anglo-Welsh League, which I just can't see ever happening. Same way I couldn't see a British and Irish League happening, because simply because the power that PRL organization has. I mean, if you're, it's the turkeys voting for Christmas argument. If they agree to a league like that, there's a chance that it could be a season where none of their teams win anything, and that's got marketing implications and everything. Just that fact alone, I couldn't see them going for it. But no, the URC has to, like you say, it's competing with those leagues. But it has to recognize how different it is, because when you throw their insular competitions within a country that's with great leagues to links forward to a test team, which is great, but we don't have that. We've got to make with what we have. It's five nations. It's never going to be easy. You're never going to suit everybody. There's always going to be problems. I think this league, although Connacht might be the ones that suffer the most, it was a bad look for the league. For the Irish four provinces to be top four, if you know what I mean, it just wasn't a good look. And I think this way of shields and stuff, we still have to see whether it works or not. But it does have the prospect. One thing about the shields is that they kind of had to manufacture one. So move over to you, David. You're battling out for the Scottish Italian shield over there. How is that sitting as the season goes ahead?
Oh, it's great to renew that rivalry with the Italians that we've never had. I mean, well, I suppose we did have at one point, because we were always trying to see who could finish bottom of the league. we probably suffer because of that, because the rest of them are genuine competitions. Obviously, Connacht fans want to beat Munster, Leinster, Ulster, you know, the Welsh teams just want to beat each other. We've got to throw ourselves in with Italians, and it doesn't quite, you know, it doesn't generate any great excitement, to be honest. But, you know, we've got to make the most of it. At the end of the day, there's a European place up for grabs on it, you know, a Champions Cup place. We want to be getting it. We don't want to be watching Edinburgh win it, or anybody else, but mainly Edinburgh. So, yeah, we'll just have to go along with it. But yeah, I think as Patrick says, you know, the league is unique. It's five different nations competing. It's never ever going to run particularly smoothly to begin with. It needs a chance. I've been critical in the past of introducing the South African teams. I think this might work this time without the level that they've got. I think it'll be good. I think the international break's going to really help, because it was always a bit of a joke watching your team playing minus 7, 8, 9, 10 plus players against a team that maybe hasn't lost quite so many. So that's going to make a big difference to it. But we have to stick with it, and we have to we have to embrace it, even if we don't have a great rivalry with the Italians as far as we're concerned. It's still got those great rivalries there. I think the South African teams maybe do need a couple of seasons. I think they're going to not lag behind a little bit, but I think they won't be too far back. Once they start to get some of the main internationals back, I think you'll see them improve again as well. Yeah, you know what? We can only try. At the end of the day, the league wasn't doing particularly great as it was. They've tried to do something to strengthen it. Let's run with it. We have to run with it. Take it. See how it goes.
It was a shame, in a way, I suppose, that the South Africans had to start on the road the way they did. And there's a lot that, you know, it would have been a lot easier to sell at home if they had some home games to start with. They had the likes of bigger teams from the Northern Hemisphere coming down and stuff. But it's the way, like, we all know how bad COVID, you know, hit them down there. So it was kind of there's no other way of doing it. But, you know, like I say, the reverse of that is that there will be reverse fixtures. Everyone's going to be, they're going to have more home games later in the season, better chance for them to promote them. So things might balance out by them in terms of that. And there's definitely a lot to play for. And it's good to see this kind of positivity about it, because it's easy to be negative about new things. And often in rugby union, that's often how a lot of new things introduced to the game have been received. So it's good to see that, you know, some positivity around, and we'll just see what happens down the line. Well, listen, before we wrap up, like, you know, just have a quick chat about your matches at the weekend. I was hoping not to mention the Dragons. After the whole point of me getting you guys on was so I wouldn't have to talk about what happened last weekend. I did enough of that in my write-up. That was an absolute brutal game to watch. But Connacht has them. You'd be feeling good about that?
I was driving across country for the Dragons Leinster match. I listened to it on the radio. And if you can, I would advise everyone to listen to Michael Corcoran, because I'm telling you, that sounded like the best 7-6 match in the world. It honestly sounded like a thriller. I went on to Twitter, goes, that was a great game. It was on the radio. It goes, no, it was awful. Was it, really? Oh, okay. But I thought it was a great game from what I listened then to anyway.
I'll tell you this for free. There was never 100,000 phases, because they barely got through three before they knocked it on. But how do you fancy it anyway?
I would be hopeful that we'd win. I think if we play like it against the Bulls, we should win. But I think Dragons will bring their own challenges. They like to spoil ball. They like to fight on the deck. Yeah. We have to be really clinical at the breakdown to stop that. And that will be a big thing for us, because it's been one of our main weaknesses. I do think you could throw a stone at Wales if you find a capable back row. You know, that's just, they breed 6s, 7s, and 8s that can, you know, in the valleys, I'm pretty sure. And that's just what they're really good at. They're good at disrupting and Dragons do that. And Sam Davies has this incredible, annoying habit of having baller games against Connacht. Go back over that couple of years. Anyone doesn't believe me. Mm. He just loves to have those type of games where he just shows why he was in the international picture against Connacht. If there's one of them and they disrupt a lot of ball, who knows? You know, so we have to be on song. We have to play like we did last week, and we've got to keep that up. We just can't let that standard slip now. And I do have a solution to the Scottish-Italian rivalry, David. We get Jake White to be the spokesperson for the Italian teams.
Done. Yeah, yes.
Sorted.
Keep his be out of the entries for long enough, then let's go over it.
That's it. They keep playing the way they are. I'll be like you say, you'll be looking for it anyway. You'll be looking for somewhere else. So, David, you guys have the Lions coming to Scotstown. So they had a good start against Zebra, but it remains to be seen if they can reproduce that kind of result. You should be reasonably hopeful for that match.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I don't really fear anybody coming to Scotstown at this point in time. Apart from probably Leinster in a couple of weeks' time, I think we've got a very exciting young side. I mean, the players that we've got, we look like we're starting back to where we were when we were bringing through Hogg and Russell and these guys. You know what? See when you've got young players like that, and you just sit back and watch. And sometimes it'll come off, and sometimes it won't, and they'll learn from it. And other times you're like, bloody hell, what a score that was. We'll go with it. I think we can win. I think we can pick up a bonus. I noticed on Saturday, I don't think the Sharks like playing on the plastic pitch, to be quite honest with you. And I think that's going to take the South African teams a bit of getting used to, because the score we got just after halftime, the ball bounced up and over their fullback's head, and I think he was completely done by probably the pitch more than the ball itself. So I think that might take them a little bit of getting used to. So that could be a leveler for the time being. I think we'll win. Looking for a bonus point as well, to be quite honest with you.
Well, listen, best of luck to you both. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks a million for coming on, and hope to have you both on later in the season when you're facing Leinster, and have a chat then. Okay, thanks, lads. Talk to you again.
Cheers, thank you.
Thanks again to Parag and David for the chat. As always, you'll find links to my guest Twitter accounts in the program notes. Be sure to add them to your timeline if you haven't already. There's also a link there to my Dragons v Leinster write-up if for some mad reason you fancy reliving that match. Next, we'll be turning our attention to the Leinster's return to the RDS this weekend against Zebra. Be sure to tune in to Hartman on rugby.net each day for all of our regular features. In the meantime, stay safe, everyone. Slán.